Coming towards the end here, but it's a bit of the Abbott and Costello show here in this particular site. Behind apparently Lou Costello. Nobody knows anyway. Yeah, this is probably what I'm talking about. But anyway, I just want to take you back to 1831, actually, is the period we're talking about now. And I just want to give you an idea about what was happening in 1830, if you don't know. It was kind of the 1968 of the 19th century, if that makes any sense. So, just to give you an idea, 1830, what was going on in Britain in 1830? Well, first of all, there's a reform movement. And that reform movement to try and get democracy has been developing right since before the French Revolution, but particularly after the French Revolution. We haven't even talked about the period between 1790 and, say, the end of the Napoleonic Wars, which is a very interesting period where there is this, a massive rise in Republican ideas in Britain, particularly in the working classes as well. 1830 is a kind of continuation of that movement. So in 1830, you've got a move towards democracy. To give you an idea of the level of democracy in 1830, approximately 5% of the adult male population could vote. Okay, it's about 5%. So, of course, no women could vote. And obviously, the age, I'm not even sure what the age for eligibility was, but the vast majority of the population are completely disenfranchised. Okay. And their tactics for political protest prior to enfranchisement are quite different. They do involve riot and stuff like that. We haven't even covered half of it in this city. But anyway, 1830 comes along and that movement, the movement for enfranchisement, for democracy, is starting to gain ground. Political unions are forming in big cities like Birmingham and Manchester, and there's a move towards reigniting the reform movement that came out after the French Revolution. Also in 1830, there's significant, probably the most significant, rural unrest that this country has ever seen, which were called the Captain Swing Riots, which were happening, started in the summer of 1830. And current historians have now logged 3,500 incidents of riot, incendiarism, that's burning buildings and haystacks, wage riots, bread riots, extortion, huge mobs of people going around wrecking machines, they wrecked threshing machines. So the whole, you've got to imagine, the whole of the British agriculture is in turmoil, with mobs of rioters going around fighting because their wages are so low, because mechanisation is driving them into poverty, their children are starving. That's all kicking off in the summer of 1830, along with the reform movement. And also in those swing riots, gangs of rioters, particularly in Kent and Sussex, are parading, and hundreds of people with the French tricolour and the Cap of Liberty, which is the little red Santa hat, if you've ever seen it, which symbolise the French Revolution and the bringing of fraternity, equality and democracy to the country. So it's kind of a very dangerous period for the rulers of this country at that time. Also, in France, in 1830, in May, June of 1830, there's a revolution. I didn't know much about this, but there's a revolution in 1830, which is where you get the famous picture of liberty leading the people. You know, the woman with her breasts hanging out, the flag and all that. That's from 1830. And it's like, there was a big revolution. 3,000 barricades go up in Paris. One of the long series of revolutions that occurred, or insurrections, that led to democracy in France. They overthrow the Bourbon dynasty. At the same time, Belgium goes up, which is a colony or part of the Netherlands. There's a huge rebellion in Belgium. It separates itself from the Holland. All these ideas are flooding across into Britain. So Europe's aflame. The rural England's aflame, the reform movement's on the march again, and that's 1830. And that causes the collapse of Wellington's government in November, Wellington being a Tory, completely opposed to reform. His name, if everyone knows what Wellington's name was, he's called the Iron Duke. And I always thought because he was kind of hard and won battles. Actually, it's because people used to wreck his house all the time, and he had to put shutters up to stop people putting bricks through his windows because he was against reform. So, very revolutionary period. The Reform Act gets put through in 1831. This is the first bit of enfranchisement. It will go from 5% of the male population to 20%. So it's the middle classes getting the vote. That's the plan. Right? That goes into Parliament. I think it goes to the House of Lords, and it's defeated. And as a result of that defeat, the defeat of democracy, there's outrage in the country, and the Speaker, who's been against reform, the recorder, I think, of the House of Lords, Charles Wetherill, comes to Bristol to have a party with the bishops and all the other people in the city, the corporation who run the city, who are against democracy. and I'll lead you on to Bud Abbott.
Thank you. As Roger said, only 5% of the population had the vote, and in Bristol, 6,000 out of a population of 104,000 had the vote. That was all. So when Sir Charles Wetherill was the Recorder of Bristol, turned up in a coach and horses drawn by four magnificent grey stallions with all the pomp and ceremony, to here, he was less than welcome. There's something else we need to consider as well. Bristol was corrupt. The corporation was like a closed shop. One of the major things that they seemed to be able to do was to spend the money on having great big knees-ups. And this, once again, Sir Charles Wetherill was coming in to celebrate this continued disenfranchisement of the vast majority of Bristolians, and he was coming to this area. Now, as you look around, you can see all the houses. You can see the customs house over there, for example. The mansion house was over there, wasn't it? You know, I mean, look how rich this is, you know. I mean, to be perfectly honest, this was the centre of the ruling class at the time in Bristol. Okay, the council house might have been down there, and there might have been the prisons over there and such like, but this is where they had their knees up, if you like. So coming here was very, very inflammatory. As he arrived, people were stoning his coach, and the word was going around that he was coming down. So basically, and I'm going to use this word, a mob started to arrive, and people started to get towards here, started to agitate, started to get together, and then they really started to brick all the houses. They took all the windows out, and Wetherill and the mayor at the time realised that it was all going a bit pitong. There was no, the magistrate couldn't handle it. There was no local authority as such that could counteract the rioters, and Wetherill eventually had to escape for his life across the roofs. He had to leg it, and there's no doubt if the rioters got a hold of him, they would have had something to say. You know, and he legged it, the mayor had to get away, and basically the whole, everybody who lived round here just about scarpered, except for Madame Tussauds. I only found this out the other day. She actually had some waxworks among the buildings here, and she tried to save her waxworks best, and I think most of them were saved. But the vast majority of people just let the rioters get on. Now, one of the first things they did was break down the houses, rip down the houses, but also Customs House was absolutely full, chock-a-block, as was the Mansion House, chock-a-block of alcohol. So a party ensued. And I suppose most of you have seen the photo, I'm going to pass it around, I mean, this is when the dragoons come out, of a big party going on round here, and they'd actually sort of knocked off the doors, if you like, brought them out here, made a table, got all the spread out, and they were eating and drinking and being merry as basically the place burnt down. Also the famous, you've got William the Third here, the Glorious Revolution and all that, and as Roger said, the tricolour and the Half of Liberty were very, very prominent, it was feared by the ruling classes, you know, and the tricolour was actually hung from William the Third's arm there as the rioting carried on. Eventually, the dragoons were called in, and they cleared the Queen's Square of the rioters, killing hundreds. A lot of people also died in the fires, and basically it was always felt that, you know, the rioters were just came down here, they saw a chance to get some free beer, have a bit of a knees up and cock a snook at the authorities. And it's always been felt, and that's why I spoke about using the word mob, that they would, that whilst there were some people down here around political reform, a lot of people just tagged on the back for a good knees up. However, the evidence suggests otherwise. When you actually take a better look at what they targeted, you see they did actually target places that were seen to be marks of their oppression. For example, as I said, the Customs House, the Mansion House, the Council House was attacked, but also all three prisons were attacked. The new prison over there, which cost, just by the Louisiana, do you know where the roundabout is by the Louisiana? Just around the corner there on the banks of Nephron. You might not be able to see it very well because all that's left really is the old front of it, and it's pretty overgrown. And we are thinking about reclaiming that space for our history at a later date, but we'll get to that another day. But like that one, the Bridewell was burnt down, and also the Stapleton Road, Nick, that used to be used to house French prisoners of war in the Napoleonic War, which is a mile outside of Bristol, wasn't it? There's also other evidence of this was pre-thought. There was some planning that went into this. There was Arkwright's foundry.
Ackerman's
foundry. And all the hammers disappeared before the riot. Absolutely disappeared. And they were used to smash in the gates of the prisons before they were burnt. and they all were back on Monday morning, except for two. And here they are. I mean, feel the weight of that.
Give it a try.
Go and smack a car.
these are models of the hammers that were used in Ackerman's foundry. They were actually forged in a forge in Easton.
Using the same methods, technology they were using there.
Because you carried that off.
Yes. Now this was probably one of the largest and most famous riots in Bristol's history. There was no doubt the local authorities lost complete control of the situation over a couple of days, and the local populace had control of the streets. They'd legged it out of here, they'd left the square to us basically, and the good knees up was had. Not only that, as Roger said, you know, the actual ruling classes were being affected by the swing riots, what was happening in Europe, the French Revolution and such like, and what happened in Bristol freaked them out so much in London that the Home Secretary was given a carte blanche to arrest what they were called reform radicals and such like prior to any disturbance in London. And of course, as we know, the Reform Act was passed in 1832, which increased the franchise by something like 8%, didn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, the Bristol riots of 1831 were definitely a marker, not only in Bristol history, but I think I could argue as well, we could argue as well, in our country's history as well. Thank you.
In the style of Lou Costello, I just want to add a couple of things to that. But first of all, it's really important, something we found out recently is that when the rich left the city because it was burning, they cleared off the Bath, and they tried to raise a militia in Bath to bring that to suppress the riot in Bristol. And there was a riot in Bath. My working classes in Bath rose up and stopped that militia actually leaving the city. So there was like action going on in Bath to actually support the rioters in Bristol as well. Also, what's very, very important, I think, as Steve said, is that there are interpretations of this riot, and they range from sort of romantic left-wing ideas about, oh, everybody supported reform and they were rioting for reform, right the way through to ridiculous right-wing ideas like it was just chaos and it was murder and everything. Now, in between these things, there's something else, and that is the agenda of the rioters themselves. And many times in the 18th century, and right up to this day, you could say about riots, riots may start for a particular reason, like a trigger. It might be a political event, it might be somebody being killed by the police. But the agenda of the rioters often comes out in the process of the riot. And clearly in Bristol, the agenda was attack the corporation, attack the rich, attack the places which incarcerate you, the prisons, and attack the clergy. Because they went straight up to Park Street, right, and they tried to burn the cathedral down. And they failed to burn the cathedral down, so they burned the bishop's palace down instead. So they had an agenda, the rioters here, and I think it was... You know, it was wrong to say that, you know, that it was chaos or that it was, you know, left-wing romanticism. The impact of the riot definitely, I think, got the reform bill put through, as did big riots in Nottingham and Derby as well. And that pressure from that fear of the lower classes revolting at that time, I think, pushed it through. It was one of the main reasons for it. And we should move to the last...